I'd like to read a few verses from Luke chapter 24. Then he said to them, "These are the words which I spoke to you while I was still with you, that all things must be fulfilled which were written in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms concerning me." And he opened their understanding that they might comprehend the scriptures. Then he said to them, "Thus it is written, and thus it was necessary for the Christ to suffer and to rise from the dead the third day, and that repentance and remission of sins should be preached in his name to all nations, beginning at Jerusalem. And you are witnesses of these things. Behold, I send the promise of my Father upon you, but tarry in the city of Jerusalem until you are endued with power from on high." I wonder if there are some of us that are still waiting for that power before we get out and do what we've been called to do. However, Scripture is quite clear, that power has been given. And the task is to share that good news with everyone around the world. And sometimes there can be segments of the population that seem to miss out on that. And we're going to hear something about that this morning as we have Reed and Amy Warner with us. And they are going to be sharing with us about the ministry that they have gotten involved in. And they are not full-time missionaries. They are just real people like you and me. And they have gotten involved in a ministry that has captured their interest and their hearts, and they are desirous of sharing that with us this morning. Reed, we'll turn it over to you this morning.
Well, good morning. Amy and I feel that it's a great privilege for us to be here in your church. So many of the folks we mentioned last hour that we have been friends a long time. Mary was reminding us that I think we were in Campus Crusade together. Is that right? Or maybe post-Campus Crusade. But Rico and Roxy Saavedra are here. Rico and I went to college together. I worked with Carl Salzman in the mortuary as a college student. And so it's like old home week, and we're really, really grateful to be here. Amy and I have been married for 38 years. And we've been small business owners. I remember one Sunday morning, someone asked me what I did for a living, and I said, I'm a small business owner. Actually, I'm a janitor. We clean office buildings. So I remember as my girlfriend and I were cleaning buildings, that is, Amy and I were cleaning buildings, I remember pushing the vacuum in Steve Primrose's dental office saying, "Oh God, don't make me a janitor the rest of my life, please." So 38 years later, we're still in the cleaning business, and we're grateful to God that he uses that in our lives to for redeeming purposes. So this morning, it's been our privilege to talk last hour, and this hour would be a little bit different perspective. Last hour was about Amy and my story, our story that God has developed in just in the last 8 years, and how we were led to go to Peru through short-term missions under the auspices of Johnny and Friends Disability Ministry, in conjunction with a ministry in Lima, Peru, called Corazones Unidos, and that's United Hearts. So I'd like to talk this morning, or this hour, more in reference to not so much our story and how we got involved, but how the church can get involved. So a little bit of take, a little bit different take on that, and also we'll look at it from a perspective of us actually being in Peru. So here's my question: of all the language groups in the world, of all the different groups in the world, what's the largest unreached people group in the world? What's the largest unreached people group in the world? Well, there's just a lot of folks out there that don't know Christ, but the largest unreached people group in the world turns out to be those with disability. people affected by disabilities. I'm going to go to the next slide here. I came to Christ in 1971 through the ministry of this guy sitting there by the arrow. Wayne Cohn had just been in town as a Campus Crusade member, and he knocked on my door one week. He gave me a magazine, came back the next week, and it was November 1971 when he showed me the bridge diagram, and I said, I need to know God in that way. So this is a picture of Wayne and his wife Debbie there with Amy. Amy and Debbie look like sisters there, and I'm in the shadows in the back, but we're on our way to Peru, and here's the guy that led me to Christ, and we are stopped in Houston, and we're at a fast food place, and Wayne has just given me $300 to bless the Peruvians with whatever way that we needed. So it was kind of awesome. So the largest unreached people group in the world are those with disabilities. Well, I didn't know that, did you? I just learned that just a couple of months ago, even though for the last 8 years we've been working with people with disabilities. In this organization, Campus Crusade, Bill Bright, the founder, wrote a book, Come Help Change the World. Well, 40 years later, Wayne and his wife are on staff or have been on staff at a church in Houston, and Amy and I are still working, and you all are still working toward helping to change the world. Pastor mentioned, and I've seen your own website and the ministries you're involved in, and that's really what it's about, is God, use us to do what we can do for your glory and for your purposes. So if we look at Mark 16:15, it says, and Jesus said to them, go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. Well, that may mean our own Jerusalem, our own family, so to speak, our own neighborhood, our own workplace. It may mean our Judea, which is maybe regional and maybe into the rest of the world, Samaria, that type of thing. And we got the bug. We got prompted, as I said last hour, to go as part of this team. And Rico and I went to school together in 1972, and I can't tell you the joy it's been for Amy and I and Rico and Roxy and I to be on the same team together. Amy and I have been 8 times, and I think you guys have been on that number of trips as well. Rico's been to Mexico, and you haven't been to Cuba, though, right? So one of the funnest things before we start these trips and these outreaches, a couple of years we were in a large barrio. Lima, Peru is a semicircle. It's ringed in a semicircle with poor barrio, shantytown type situations. A lot of poor people. Not campers, you call them squatters. Thank you. So anyway, after the church service in this poor section, Rico and I were out there playing basketball with these little kids, and I'm 5'6", and I don't know if Rico's that tall as I am, or maybe he's a little taller than me. And as we're passing the basketball back to each other, we looked at each other and we said, we were made for Peruvian basketball. Because the Peruvian people are not as tall as we are. So anyway, I don't know how I diverted so quickly to that, but it's been a joy for us to be on these teams with old friends. And Rico has a day job, but Rico has been the team pastor. And I just love the pastoral input that so naturally comes to Rico. And as we're going through things, and at the end of the day, we have these debrief sessions, and even during the day, we huddle up if we're in a crisis. You know, we can't find this. This poor lady's been here for 5 hours. We need this. And so, you know, Rico will come over, or at the end of the day, we'll lead a service. And I just love Rico's heart, and just ministers to me. Roxy has been the gatekeeper This is a really tough job. When people are coming and waiting and trying to get in, and she gives them the number. Well, your number's not up yet. No, I need to go over there. No, you don't. So Roxy has a very special gift in her own right to direct traffic. So altogether, we have decided, we've been able to, by the Lord's leading, to do this short-term missions trip. And this is one of the ways that we're going into all the world to proclaim the gospel. And often, 99% of the time, it's the Peruvians leading the Peruvians to Christ, and we're part of the support team that makes that happen. So it's pretty awesome. So we've answered that question, what is the largest unreached people group in the world? It's those people that are affected by disabilities. Did you know that of the 7 billion people on earth, that at least 10% are people with disabilities? That's cross-cultural, that's cross-language, that's cross-ethnic groups. But 10%, 1 out of 10 at least. In Peru, it's as high as 30%. I mean, we've seen people with tuberculosis. We've seen people with chicken. Is it? What's the disease that was eradicated by the vaccine? Polio. Polio. We've seen folks with polio. It's a common occurrence. These people get around on their children's backs, their adult children's backs, or mom or dad is hauling them around on their backs. They would sit folks down next to us, and they'd say, well, now I've got a back problem because I've been carrying dad for the last 5 years. So in these countries like Peru, there's at least upwards of 30%. 80% of the people with disabilities live in part of the planet called the majority world, or the third world, or the developing world. It's now called the majority world because there's more of them than there is of us. Did you know that around 70%, two-thirds of the world lives on $2 a day or less? One-third of the world lives on $1 a day. Everybody sitting here, we are wealthy. The Americans show up and they say, these people are wealthy. We're like, no, we're not. We're scratching out a living. Well, for as much as it takes for us to go get a cup of coffee at Frontier Restaurant, that's their whole daily allowance. That's what they can scrape together. Their whole day is figuring out what they can do to survive. And when they have family members with disabilities, it's a whole different thing. So if you get a cup of coffee with bacon and eggs, that's the other third of the world. So we definitely are in a different part of the world. And the idea of why has God blessed us? How come I got born in Illinois and not Lima, Peru? Barrio, Lima, Peru. Well, we have our own problems with our affluence and understanding God and having a vibrant life with Him because of our affluence. It's awesome to see Christians in Peru and their relationship with God, because it's real. So in the U.S., our nation's largest minority group is, guess what? Those with disability, and Pastor already said this morning, that guess where we're all headed? If God gives us more years of life, we're just going to be slowing down and breaking down. So I know that's news to nobody. I know that you all know that. So between 1990 and 2000, there were 25% increase in these people with disabilities just here in the U.S. It's more and more. If you go to the rest homes, the nursing homes, the assisted living, the rehabilitation centers around Albuquerque, you'll see wing after wing after wing of folks that don't have families, of folks that don't have people interacting with them. What is it? The harvest is, the fields are white with harvest. Anyway, so the question was asked last hour, where do we get wheelchairs? Well, I don't know how many people around Albuquerque have passed away and left wheelchairs, but there's a lot of work that we can do to pick those up and reclaim them. So also in the United States, this group represents the largest single minority group seeking employment. You think employment's bad for able-bodied? If you're disabled, it's even worse. So it's about 30% of the people with disabilities. Let me back up. 70 million families in the United States, 20 million of us families have at least one family member with a disability. So that's not news. But maybe we haven't really thought of it or heard of it that way. Over 65% of the working age adults are unemployed, and nearly twice as many of those with disabilities, they earn $15,000 or less. That's like $1,200-$1,300 a month. So it's out there, it's all around us. And I got these figures from a U.S. Disability Funding website, 2012, so it's pretty current. How about in the New Testament, when you think of Jesus, how many miracles that Jesus did are around or about folks with disabilities? What would your guess be? Okay, well, maybe there was 37, 32. It depends on what you consider a miracle and whatever. So, what would you guess? Well, I didn't know this. 70% of the miracles Jesus performed were involving people with disabilities. Really? That kind of flew under my radar. And I've been a Bible student ever since. You know, I went to a storefront Cornerstone Bible School that Dan Johnston and Jay Kalina had over by Girard in Central, and I went to 2 years of another. I didn't know this. Did you know that? 70% of the miracles Jesus performed involved people with disabilities, and he was working with people that had that kind of thing going on. Wow. Okay. So 50% of the miracles in Acts had to do with people with disabilities. So that was from like 30 AD to, what, 65 AD or so. The next 35 years that miracles are recorded in Paul's letters, I should say, for about 35 years there. So anyway, disability ministry to those affected by disability is a pretty big deal. And we're going to get into chapter 14 of Luke, and we're gonna look at some things there. It's kind of an anchor passage for Johnny and Friends Disability Ministry, one of the largest ones in the country. Actually, Rico and Roxy and Amy and I were able to go out there and at the Disability Center, and a lot of folks around the world have heard of. Not only just in the United States, but around the world, have heard of Johnny Erickson Tada and her ministry, but it was back in the 70s when she was disabled. So I'd like to introduce to you our friends, Rico and Roxy and Amy and my friends. I just met a new friend that knows Paul. Paul is here. He is I was going to say respiratory therapist, but I'm not sure what he does. Amy knows. Is he a physical therapist? Okay. So he met Debbie like 28 years ago. Debbie's from Espanola here, and she became a paraplegic person in her 20s. So she's been with that almost 30 years or so. And of course, Johnny, if you look at Johnny, this is 2007 when we're able to go out there to the International Disability Center. We didn't know this, but she looks tired. She looks kind of haggard there. She's at this point been involved with a lot of pain. And since then, she has had breast cancer and survived that, and now for, I don't know, what is she, 65, 66, something like that. Let's see, 17 and 45 is 62. So she's early 60s, mid-60s, but she's been in this wheelchair for like 45 years, and she actually has perked up. We thought she was going to, this cancer battle would be the end of it. But so Paul is a regular guy, but he's a really gifted regular guy, And Paul and Debbie are the ones that started taking teams down to Peru. And Amy and I and Rico and Roxy and I have been going since 2006. Okay, so in Peru, Corazones Unidos, there's our friend to the right is Elizabeth Tacuri, whose right-hand person is Janina Espinosa there. She's a wife of a pastor. This is at 11 o'clock at night in 2010. We talked about getting wheelchairs off the trucks in order to get them to the site where we're going to have the next day. Well, Elizabeth said, well, I'm gonna go over here. And we said, can we help? And, man, it was like a lot of people ended up helping her. She's been up at 3 o'clock in the morning taking care of business for the next day's ministry. She's a hard worker. I'm sorry, how long do we have before the end of the... Are we done at...
Somewhere between 11:30 and 11:45.
Okay. All right. I thought it was 11:15 and we were going to land this plane awfully quick. But we got a few more minutes. So I would like to see if it would possibly work. If our sister could... Can you link on... Can you just with your mouse click on... This is Paul at an opening ceremony at the back one. Can your mouse just click on the... There's no link? Okay. All right. Okay, not a problem. Okay, so what this is Paul in a opening ceremony with our friend Aldo, who is the translator, and what he's saying is we're so glad to be here in Peru, and thank you for welcoming us, and this is what we do is seat people in wheelchairs, but everything we do, we want to introduce people to the love of Christ and to the salvation that is only in Him. He's very articulate and does a great job doing that. So that sets the tone. This is what it looks like on the first workday as Paul is lifting Debbie off the bus into her wheelchair. And it's pretty tricky. We've had people fall over in wheelchairs. We've had people... it's another world just a few feet away from the person in the wheelchair. And that's reality. For Paul and Debbie and for Johnny, Eric, and Todd and for 20 million American families, it's different. So this is much like Tingley Coliseum where we've had the first couple of outreaches. Lots of wheelchairs there. The white plastic chairs that are universal around the world, I think. All made and bought in China. Sent over here. Anyway, they... even more festivities and people will come in from around mountain areas, from poor areas that have applied and asked to have wheelchairs. And so they'll bring their paper in months in advance. This has been set up. And so if their time to see the therapist is around 4 o'clock or 2 o'clock or whatever, they may show up at 8 o'clock in the morning and they may just sit there all day. So we try to move through that as quick as we can, and it's interesting. This is the outcome that we hope to see, that the physical therapist there, I've forgotten her name, this young lady. Annie. Yes, Annie. Now I remember. Annie's name. Annie, that just worked out. That I don't think that kid had ever walked. I think that was part of the story with his little walker. Man, now think of it. That kid can now get around without crawling on the ground. He can go places as he gets older with his family. It's just a whole new world. This is a picture in 2010. This guy, this teenager, is autistic, and I was surprised when the closer I got to him as I was working with him, he just reached out and clobbered me. And I'm like... And then the mom's really embarrassed, and he's doing autistic stuff, which is normal for autistic guys. So that's Pat Frazier. She works up here. She and her husband own 50 and Fit. He was a great kid, but I never connected with him. You know, that little kid, physically there's stuff going on. This kid's got all kinds of stuff going on, and the mom they don't realize that when we're there, we're all in. We love your kid. Your kid's beating up on me and pulling my hair, and it's fine. That's the way their family is, but they're afraid. You know, gee, my kid's kind of out of control. It's like, that's the way autistic kids are. It's okay. And it's from a guy. I'm saying that. My heart has changed. I don't have the gift of mercy. My wife knows that. My mother-in-law knows that. So here we go. This is another. This is how we start. We've got Paul here and Debbie. They're praying for this person in this chair, and here's the lady that's she's the guide. She's part of a church, and she's there to push this to wheel this person through the different stations. And we have a translator, maybe this lady here. And Paul could be the physical therapist. He's actually praying at the start of that person's sitting, and that God help us to find the right chair. Please find us the right chair for us. That same prayer and conversation happens maybe with Paul, maybe 10 times a day, or maybe half a dozen times a day. And Rico is usually a mechanic on one, and I'm a mechanic on another, and Amy's in the back doing the support things as they get their chair seated, and it works together. Then Amy will come forward, and Amy in her graciousness will lean over and give them this gift from God. Please don't think this chair is from North Americans. This is from Jesus. This, don't think of us, think of Jesus. Jesus gave you this mobility. He also wants to give you new life in Christ. And Roxy is the one that determines where this person will go, what mechanic will take care of. So Roxy's been really gracious in not giving me the hard ones. Brian Bickett gets the hard ones. So there's Amy and I cutting wood. You say cut wood on a wheelchair? Well, actually, a lot of these people will need to have a firm seat with a cushion. So we'll cut a, I don't know, 17 by 17 or a 15 by 15. And that's where Amy, sometimes she'll cut the wood, does a great job with somebody else, and then they cut out foam, and then they put Naga hide, and we staple gun it on together, and then we tape the staples so that people, a lot of these folks, if we don't do it right, will get injured just the way we fix the wheelchair. So it's all quite a buzz. It's like a bunch of busy bees, especially after the first day where it's disorganized chaos, as I said, previous hour. After day two or three, it becomes more organized chaos. All right, and there's Elizabeth. Elizabeth on so many levels. She's such a great worker for the Lord. She not only is able to organize her own her own little ministry, but she's also great up front with people, and she might say a word from the Lord with Bible passage. She's a Bible student. She also works with government entities. She works under the auspices of so many pastors throughout Lima as well as throughout Peru. And I've seen her pray with one of our team members. Chris Gitto has brittle bone disease, which is not the medical term, but he's got short feet and short hands, and he's an awesome photographer. So when he's going like this and they're looking at him, and he's got a smile from ear to ear, and God's using him to speak into their life. Anyway, I saw Elizabeth, her heart come out as she's ministering to him. So that's Pat's husband, George, and that's the result of that particular fitting. So I don't know that girl's name, but that's awesome to see her. And there's Elizabeth again at Villa El Salvador, one of the barrios. Now this fella, I don't remember his name again, but this brother, I mentioned that Amy and I work with marriages, and he says in the barrio, he says, I'm a pastor, and we have people come over to our home, and I pray for their marriages. I'm like, God's at work everywhere. And so we were able to give this brother a wheelchair, and it was awesome. So here's a pastor and his wife there on the right, and the lady in the middle is Mercedes. These two ladies are two of Amy's best friends in Peru. They're hard workers. The lady in the middle, 50-cent bus. Actually, it's not a bus. It's a van ride. They call it a combi. It's made for like 11 people, and like 20 can fit in there. And so she gets there a little bit late because she's on the road for 2 hours till she gets there. And she makes this clunker sewing machine. Amy's a seamstress. Sewed her a wedding dress, and so she knows how to sew. This lady could, but she couldn't figure out this clunker sewing machine. And this lady made it hum. That was Mercedes. So we make deep friendships for a week and say, man, I hate to leave. So one last story here, and then we'll get into chapter 14 of Luke. This lady, her story, I believe her name is Carmen. She came in, I forgot how she got here. She did not get a wheelchair. I think somebody carried her. She's got rheumatoid arthritis. Maybe Roxy remembers her. She was telling the physical therapist. She was telling Mary, who works over at Tingley. She says, I'm disabled because I'm cursed. Mary, that just stung Mary. She's like, really? What? She's like, my mother was pregnant with me, and there was a bad rainstorm, and she was able to take cover in a cave, and it was really close to delivery, and inside this cave there were lots of dead bones all around, and my mother gave birth to me in this cave, and I'm cursed. That's why I have disability. And Mary was telling me this, and I'm like, oh, man. So we're praying, we're thinking as we're buzzing around, and then Mary came over to me, and she said, Reed, Jesus was born in a manger. Some people think that manger was a cave. I'm going to tell this lady that Jesus wasn't cursed, and he was born in a cave, or something very much like a cave. So by the end of it, you can't see, but if you saw closer, she's in this wheelchair, and she's got tears running down her eyes. This is a picture which I could wish I could do a close-up, but there she is sitting with this lap table. She can eat here on this thing. These are the mechanics around. They're in the back or the support people that put together a cushion. You see her wearing a hat. She is ear to ear with a smile. She is so happy, and Mary was able to share Christ with her. So those are the kind of people we meet, and we can only touch them on after they go through the medical tent and get medical help or whatever. They go to the counseling, the Peruvians with the Peruvians. The Peruvians share Christ with them. Do you know why these North Americans are here? No. They love Jesus. Do you love Jesus? I'm a Catholic. Well, that's okay. Do you know Jesus? Well, no. So they share Christ with them, the plan of salvation, like my 70-year-old brother, and they come to Christ. Awesome. Here again is Elizabeth at work with a TV station at the hotel that we stay at. This is a little thing outside the restaurant, but the TV crew is there. This is again Amy with Mercedes. In Ayacucho, where we were a year ago, this is where, and I told Pastor Borsma this. So, Albuquerque has a connection to this area. There, a man by the name of Romeo Sanye was a Bible student. Wycliffe Bible Translators connected with him. He actually translated the Quechua Bible into the Ayacucho language, Romulo Sanye. In 1989, he came to Albuquerque. His mother couldn't read the Bible that he translated, and faith comes by hearing, which used to be Hosanna. They had this Bible on audio. He took it back so his mother could hear. Romulo Sanye in the 1980s was aware the whole country was going through the Shining Path terrorism. This country of 29 million people had this Maoist terrorist organization that was creating chaos throughout the country. 800 pastors were martyred in Peru. Can you imagine what kind of news there would be in a country 10 times the size like America if we had 800 pastors martyred? That'd be big news. In Peru, in the 80s and early 90s, 800 pastors were martyred. Ayacucho is where, it turns out, Romulo Sanye is from, and he was martyred. He did all of this, brought the New Testament to his family, to his friends, to this area. This area knew deep tragedy and violence. Government, terrorists, they had 15,000, they had 10% of their population killed in this area. Here we are 20 years later, and it was like a few days after this photo was taken of all these therapists and the team and their little guide turning around there with a smile on his face. We were putting two to two together, and we could not believe it. Here, Rico and Roxy and Amy and I, we are part of the answer to the prayers to Romulo Sanye. It's awesome. 20 years later, we're part of the answer. These Ayacucho people were hearing the gospel. And in the three localities, the three mayors that took me on suffering, and we went to these three locations, I think 112 people came to Christ. In your bulletin today, one of the mayors is highlighted in the little newsletter that I gave you. This guy is a Christian. This guy is all about helping his people. This man here is a pastor that helped. I'm giving him one of these Faith Comes by Hearing boxes, audio, boombox, with the Ayacucho Quechua New Testament. Just a random idea that wasn't really random came to me a couple of days before we left. Maybe I can take one of these proclaimers, and sure enough, they had the Ayacucho language, and it just all came to us a few days later. This guy, Romulo, his last name, I think, is Santiago. He's a pastor. He runs a 46-person radio orphanage, and he has a radio station. This guy does not... I think we work hard. This guy. So he takes this, and the next morning he's got it. He's got the microphone next to the proclaimer with the Bible being read on air to 1,000 people around the area. It's who can put this kind of stuff together? It's awesome. God is at work. So let's look. I just want to in the last couple of minutes here. I want to read, and I'll do it rather quickly here, in Luke 14. I want to put this into perspective. This is toward the end of Jesus' ministry. He's got a few months left before he is arrested, tortured, and crucified. And in chapter 14 of Luke, beginning with verse 12, it says, "Now he told a parable to those who were invited when he noticed how they chose the places of honor, saying to them, when you are invited..." I'm sorry, is that the right word? I'm on verse 7, I should be on verse 12. So, in the same context of time and so forth, verse 12. "He said to the man who was invited him, he said, when you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends, your brothers, or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest they also give you in return, invite you in return, and you be repaid." So, why isn't he supposed to invite people, family, and friends? Well, because there's a payback here. And it's like a gentle rebuke, or maybe not so gentle, to the guy that invited Jesus. He's saying, don't invite all these rich people and family and friends. You're a man of means. You can invite all these people and this kind of thing, but don't do that. What's the problem with the first invitation? It's all about me. The guy that invited him, it's all about him. I'm inviting you here so that I'm going to be somehow repaid because I'm being benevolent to you. Out of my generosity, it's really coming back to me. Jesus said, that's really not the way to do it. So there in verse 18, let's pick it up again. Well, let's pick it up in 16. He says, "A man once gave a great banquet, invited many, and at the time for the banquet, he sent his servant to say to those who had been invited, 'Come, for everything's now ready.'" What's the problem here? The next verse is the problem. "But They all alike began to make excuses. Wait a minute. I've got this big banquet. I'm rich. I can actually have a place to have a huge banquet. I can invite a lot of people, a lot of family, a lot of rich people. I send out the invite because it's all about me and I want to have this big thing all about me. But nobody comes. Well, maybe they sense. But if you look at all these three excuses, they're all bogus. Verse 16. They all began alike to make excuses. The first one said, I bought a field. Verse 19, another said, I bought five yoke of oxen. Verse 20, another said, I'm married to a wife. Well, so what? You can still spend the afternoon or evening, but they gave these lame excuses. Verse 21. So as we go through the outline, more excuses. The problem with the excuses is that they're all excuses. So verse 21, so the servant came and reported these things to his master. Then the master of the house became angry. Well, if he was so generous and benevolent and it wasn't about him, would he be angry? Probably not. But apparently it was all about him. So he says, okay, now check this out. He says in verse 21, go out quickly, pronto. Quickly to the streets, the lanes of the city, and bring in the poor, the crippled, and the blind, and the lame. Wait a minute. Those kind of people aren't really accepted. They're not really, they're the lower end of society. And if I'm a good religious, maybe Pharisee type of guy, then I'm inviting these unclean people into my... Are you kidding? But here's what this guy did. Here's what Jesus in this parable is saying. Verse 22, sir, you have what you have commanded has been done, and still there's room. So he does this, and he gets some response. Notice in the next verse, the master then says, go out to the highways and the hedges and compel people. Compel. What does your translation say? Compel. Make them. Press is another one. Urge. Another translation might be command. Really? So the parable, the point of the parable here is that with these disabled people, he's saying go out and drag these people in. Really? Well, why? Here's what he says. Verse 23, the master said to the servant, verse 24, I should say, for I tell you, none of these men who were invited shall taste my banquet. Let me back up a little bit. He says, go out to the highways and the hedges, compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. That my house may be filled. So Rico and Roxy and Amy and I have gone to Grace Church for a number of years, and it's only in the last few years where we've had this mindset. If 10% of the population is disabled in America, in the city, we'd have 60, 70, maybe 70 people that are disabled in our midst. What's the problem? I see these people in Peru knocking themselves out. What's wrong with us? Well, I see these people in Peru and hear the stories that the people with disabilities are in dark rooms. Where are they here? Same place. Disabled folks are isolated. Well, I say this as an encouragement to myself, as an exhortation to myself. Because I think, well, I'm busy, I really don't have time. It takes more work. When you're compelling someone, there's a lot of energy. It takes $2,500 to go over to Peru. Is that really worth it? Well, I don't know, put a price tag on. You know, I thought about it 1 year. Okay, so we seat, say, 200 people times $2,500 is what? Let's see, that's $50,000. Is it worth it to see? Can you, in America, seat 50 people going through our system for $50,000? Probably not. And there's a great opportunity, great chance these people are going to come to Christ. Well, this point here in verse 23, when Jesus says that my house may be filled, he's transitioned, I think, in the parable where it reflects what is said in Revelation 19 about the marriage supper. Jesus wants his banquet table to be filled with disabled people, with people with disabilities. Really? It changes it. It's, let me speak for myself and Amy. It's changed the way we view our stuff. Pastor Boer's been talking about our stuff. The way we view our life, the way we view other people's life, the way we view our relationship with God. And I don't have the gift of mercy, but I'm a lot more merciful person. My heart has been broken lots of times seeing folks. So, filled is another thing. Why minister to people with disabilities? Bottom line is love. I know your church is involved in a lot of ministries. There's a list of them right there. A lot of international, a lot of local, a lot of national. So you all are involved. And may I say thank you that you're involved in our family. I mentioned that not only more recently in the last year and a half, Pastor Boersma had, this church had a memorial service for my father-in-law, for Amy's dad, for mom's husband of 60 plus years. You all have ministered to us. And as weird as it is, 40 years ago, Carl Saltzman and Dr. McReynolds ministered to me when I was a college kid when my dad died also. So there's ministry going on wall to wall here. But maybe you might be inclined to think about this ministry we're talking about. Part of your mission statement is to reach out to the unsaved through the preaching of Jesus Christ at home and abroad. So, if you're interested to get involved as a short-term missionary, or you want to be a link in that long chain on the end of the chain, somebody coming to Christ that we'll see in heaven through this disability ministry, Amy reminded me, with Johnny and Friends, you can go on the website, but locally, New Mexico July is having a family retreat. Well, every 4 months we have these mini retreats or respites where we'll pick a location and we'll invite families locally, come bring your disabled child and we'll take care of them and do games and bingo and art stuff and just hang out with them. All ranges of disability. And I said last hour, I'm like way over my head. I'm stressed, and I went the first year that we're doing that. I'm a mechanic. I feel the same way, and yet one of our brothers, Richard, is so good with people with disabilities, especially the really, really disabled. And I said, Richard, brother, you're so good. And you know what he said? He said, Reed, I'm so over my head every time I'm with a kid. I said, Richard, you do it so naturally. He says, man, I'm just freaked out. I just say, God, help me to relate to this kid, to this person. So Richard does that for 4 hours about every 4 months, and the relief that it gives these families that have people with disabilities, it's awesome. They go to dinner, they go shopping, they might go to a movie, they come back, their eyes are lit up, how'd the kids do? The kids always do great. Well, Richard does this for a week, same kind of thing at a family retreat where the family is off having a retreat and the person with disabilities has their own retreat. It's called Family Retreat. That's coming to New Mexico in July at Lone Tree Camp. So people take their vacation from work, and instead of going somewhere, they go to these family retreats. Wheels for the World, Wheelchair Corps, if you want to help us collect, if you want to help sign up with Amy or mention to her, I've got lap blankets, small lap blankets. The big ones are too bulky, but if you go on vacation and you have little bitty hotel soaps, or you can score a bucket load of those. We take those and put those in, and so those folks have shampoo and this kind of stuff. Our church, we've had 28 people from our church go to Peru in the last 10 years, and we're all normal people. None of us know what we're doing, and yet we do what we can, and the Lord leads us, and we have a great pastor that just sets the tone. It's just an awesome experience. And if you want to go, let us know. You can go on site and website, or you can help Amy with support type stuff. So individually, or if your church wants to join us, Rico and Roxy once a month go to a rehabilitation center next to Grace Church, and we have this satellite church with about 30 people in it. When we started, there was only 5 or 6. Now there's like 30 or 40 people, families, people with disabilities and their families come every Sunday. And Rico and Roxy, Pastor Rico, does a great job once a month over there. So there's the website, and that's it pretty much. So.